April 18, 2018. This is The Better Life. I couldn't be more excited. Today is the last day of the week before I head off to Gamblepalooza. I'm meeting up with Vito, Eric Rosenthal, the guys from You Can Bet on That, and a lot of listeners that are chiming in, saying that they're going, saying they're excited to throw some dice. I'm excited to meet you all as well and get some cocktails in me, get some dice in the air. It's going to be a good time. I'm looking forward to it. I don't have a lot to report. I haven't really done much in the casino realm since last week because I knew Gamblepalooza was coming up, and the wife expects me to get some things done around the house, so I was doing that. Just a couple of housekeeping notes. You've probably heard by now that The Better Life is sponsoring the Podcasters After Dark event at Zorkfest. Very excited to do that. I will not be at Zorkfest. I will be in Europe showing my mother a wonderful time in Western Europe. But I will be there in spirit and in brand as a sponsor of Podcasters After Dark. I do have two tickets to the event. So if you are someone who is going to be in the area but not attending Zorkfest, there will be an opportunity to get two tickets from me to attend that event. It is over Memorial Day weekend. Details to come on that. I'll probably pitch them to a Patreon follower, maybe do like a contest on Twitter or something like that. There is going to be a high limit slot pull at Gamblepalooza, which occurs in 2 days. I am probably not participating in that, but I'm willing to get someone else involved that won't be there. So hit me up on Twitter. If this is you, hit me up on Twitter, at The Better Life, and be like, hey, trying to get down on that high limit slot pull. I'm only doing this for like one or two people, right? So it's not all comers are gonna get hooked up. First couple people that ping me, I'll DM you my PayPal email address, and we'll move from there, and I'll get your share of the high limit slot pool. I think it's $100 a share. So if you're not going to Gamblepalooza and you want to get down on that, hit me up on Twitter at The Better Life. Also going down to Gamblepalooza, plenty of craps playing. And one of the things that I'm going to be doing spread throughout my craps play is making hard way bets for charity. That's right. We're going to make hard way bets for charity. I'm going to throw out probably just a one unit bet. And if it hits, that money will be set aside to be donated to charity. And if it loses, I'll probably still kick the charity a little bit of money, but probably not as much as it would if it hit the hard way. And the charity I'm going to be playing for is a organization called Hill Vets. And Hill Vets is an organization here in Washington, D.C. That helps post-military veterans transition from their time in the military to moving to D.C. And that's sort of when Hill Vets receives them when they're in D.C. And they help them network, and more importantly, they have processes in place, fellowships and whatnot, that help veterans get jobs on the Hill as staffers for Congress and Senate and stuff like that. So when you hear a charity, you think of helping the less fortunate, but this is a very important deal, since I think it's important that we have representation like that up on the Hill. And it's a really cool way to support a significant segment of our population. So that is who will be benefiting from that. If you want to contribute, if you want to be like, hey, let me help out with the hard way for charity action, I put out a poll on Twitter requesting that people vote for which hard way that I bet, and that'll just be the one that I do for the duration there. And we're only talking, I'm only going to do like a few, right? I'm not emptying my bankroll on this idea, but I thought it'd be fun to do it maybe once or twice per session. If you want to get down, hit me up on Twitter at The Better Life and be like, hey, want to contribute to the charity hard way bet, and similarly to the slot poll, I'll hook you up with my PayPal email. You can send me over, 10, 15 bucks, and we'll put it in action for Hill Vets. So it should be fun. Today's interview is with Adam Bauer. aka Vegas fanboy, aka travel fanboy, aka fanboy. I've only really known him as Vegas fanboy, as travel fanboy, I should say, that's what he was when I came into the community. Him and I are going to talk about his introduction to gambling, his life in poker. He played a lot of poker early on, how he got infatuated and fascinated by travel, points-based traveling, stuff like that, what he enjoys about Vegas, much more. Great interview. Enjoy. Adam, let's talk about, we like to start this show on the same foot for sure. Each interview and from square one. Square one being your exposure to gambling, when you first saw it, when maybe you were with a family or friend, maybe you saw it on TV, whatever it may be. Maybe it's not something where you were partaking in it, but you were just exposed to the game, to some form of gambling.
Oh, yeah. You know, for me, it was my grandparents, and it was really young. I want to say like 5 or 6 years old. So I lived with my grandparents for a spell, and after school, you know, we'd come home, my brother and I, we'd do our homework, and then we would play. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of this game. I'm sure some people have. It's called Tripoli. Have you ever heard of that game? It's more like a board game.
I think so I've heard of it. Yeah. I don't know if I could identify and be like, oh, look, they're playing Tripoli.
Right. So I could identify it visually, but I could not explain to you what it's about anymore. It's been so long. It's basically like, there's like multiple rounds, and it's a combination of like hearts and poker and I think it's called Michigan Rummy, something like that. And so it really, for me, what that did is it kind of just introduced me to just like, you know, the card hands and the rules around like poker and stuff like that, which definitely got me interested. But then further at, you know, my grandparents, what they had kind of these old like little handheld digital games, and it was video poker. And so, like, you know, in the winter months and stuff, I remember just being in my, you know, my grandparents' den, having this little video poker handheld game. And like, I would challenge myself at like six years old to just see how long I can make the credits on the game last. And that's kind of where I actually, you know, became kind of like a little mini video poker buff at like 7 years old.
That's awesome. So when do you remember like doing your own betting then? Was it when you first walk into a casino? Did you have a NBA did you have a bracket pool with your friends in high school? When were you actually wagering yourself?
Yeah, so it was definitely high school. We would, you know, I kind of grew up probably, I was in high school a little bit before the poker boom really took hold. I was still watching it prior to 2003 on TV, but my buddies and I in high school actually had our own like little mini poker ring going on at the school. And what was interesting about this was that we couldn't, of course, use actual money out in the open or chips or anything like that because we would get caught. So what we would do is we would meet in this one classroom and we would play this poker game it was easy to track where the money was going. So it wasn't hold'em. It was just kind of this odd little carnival game that we played. And we would have on a notebook, it was basically a ledger of the game that day, where the money went to, who was holding the money, and then we would all pay up at the end of the, typically it was the end of the week, sometimes it was the end of the day, depending, you know, on how it was going. But yeah, we would all settle up then. So I wish I could find that ledger now, but it was just filled and filled and filled with names and little marks kind of saying where our low limit games and all how the money was flowing.
Yeah, I like that kind of, you got a ledger with. So like as you're playing, you would like, oh, this person bets this much, or is it real time or how often are you updating this ledger?
Yeah, we kind of modified it. So the easy way that we did it was based on everyone would buy in with the same amount, and then we would track who was holding how much money at the end. And that's kind of how we would shift money around kind of day to day and then week to week. I'm 100% confident that we messed up numbers here and there, but everyone was kind of on the up and up, and you know, we're all just good friends, so no one's trying to, you know, screw each other over or anything. But I just remember that being like a very self-aware at like 15, 16 years old, like, this seems like pretty degenerate behavior.
Seems like pretty degenerate behavior. How about that? So when did you finally step into your first casino?
So first casino was, I was 21. I was going to Illinois State University, and there is a casino in Peoria that's not terribly far. I think it's called Paradise, or it was at the time. In Illinois, they've all got to be the riverboat casinos there. And so my stepdad drove down on my 21st birthday. We drove over to the casino. My first game ever was three-card poker. We just got destroyed because I think that's just, I don't think anybody's ever actually won at three card poker. So that's, yeah, that's kind of how that went. A very kind of surreal first gambling experience.
Yeah. So then as you, you know, you're a budget gambler, a budget traveler, as you sort of got familiar with Vegas and the casino, what games did you usually gravitate towards for your gambling experience?
Right. Yeah. So at the beginning, it was primarily poker because that's just what I was most familiar with. And that's what I was most confident in. I would break away occasionally and try some table games. In fact, I think the first table game I did or played in Vegas was, it was a $5 pitch blackjack game at the Luxor. And again, I just got, you know, my butt handed to me. And so I think actually that was pretty important that my first two major table game experiences were ones in which my bankroll was wiped clean fairly quickly. Because I think it actually helped me develop a pretty good respect for the games. And so I think had I won a lot at the beginning, I don't think I would have as a healthy outlook as I do now.
Yeah. So when you said mostly poker, I mean, you're talking about going to poker rooms and sitting down at like cash games.
Yeah. And I think I am proud of myself when I was younger. I mean, I'm talking like I was 21, 22, 23 when I was going to Vegas the first few times. And I would make sure that I wasn't playing at the same time that some good poker players were going to be there. So I would follow along like the message boards where, you know, these kind of, I don't want to call them sharks, but, you know, just better players, what their habits were, where they said they were playing. And I would try and find like the big tourist traps and play with conventioneers and people who didn't really know what they were doing. And that actually served me pretty well because I would kind of subsidize, you know, the rest of my trip off the first couple of days there playing poker.
Yeah, I mean, were you mostly playing like 1-2 blinds, or did you ever go up from there?
Yeah, I would mostly play 1-2 just because I was a broke 21, 22-year-old, and that's just kind of what I could afford. Occasionally, I would just go and jump into a 2-4 limit game, which I think are probably some of the most frustrating poker games to play because everybody calls everything. So it's one of those where that's kind of more of a gamble, but sometimes I would go in and frustrate the old timers who like the slow limit game and just raise and raise and raise every hand.
Frustrate the old timers. I like that. There is one thing in it. I don't know. When was the last time you were in a poker room?
Not long ago. We've got a couple. I live in Detroit now. We've got three okay. really good poker rooms here in Detroit. So just a couple months ago.
Okay. I have not been in a poker room in a while. And by a while, I mean probably over 4 or 5 years. It's been a while since I've stepped inside a poker room. And I remember part of the experience of walking into a poker room was, and maybe because poker was still coming off of its high. Sure. You know, like I remember I was in Lima, Peru when Black Friday happened, right? And I was I was playing online like most people were. I was playing at the local casino, I was playing with the Peruvians, and I remember coming back and I would go into it like so the, it's still fresh off its high, and it seemed like there was just so many arrogant people at the table. Like,
yeah.
I just can't handle, and this is one of the biggest turnoffs. And I love poker. Like I remember I would watch every World Poker Tour, every Poker After Dark, every video that I could find. I just loved it.
Yeah.
I just could not sit down with strangers at a table because there was just so much. Like you would sit down and you could feel everybody's disdain for you as you sat down, like as if, you know, like who are you to sit there? You know, I don't know. It was like it wasn't as friendly as you would find it almost at any other game in the casino. And you know, and with that being the experience, like, you know, grinding out a profit, you know, cause I'm okay at poker, but I don't know if I'm above average, but, every day when I'm at, or not every day, but every time I'm at the casino, I see the poker room and every time I get this itch, like I should go sit down. But then I'm like, I don't know, man, like what, I'm gonna get cleaned up, you know, and I don't know if I want that, you know?
So. Right. No, I think you're right. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that's why I've gravitated away from poker. Is for me, that's the game I always pretty much knew, and so that's what I gravitated towards. But I can attest that sitting at a poker table long enough, you sit with some of the most unsavory characters. That I don't want to disparage all poker players. There's some really nice people out there that play poker, But you're right. It's like, eh, you know, I'm okay. I'm not good enough that this is a lucrative hobby. I just kind of have fun doing it. And I happen, I think, early, you know, in my gambling career, get pretty lucky. But you're right. I mean, it is at times an unfriendly, sometimes an agitating place to be around. And if now my time at the casino is more limited when I'm going on these trips, and I think to get a good poker session in, you've got to be there at least 2 hours. You know, unless you're a super aggressive player, I'm not. And so, you know, if I'm only going to sit down, play maybe just a couple hands, that's, you know, that's not worth my time. So I do tend to gravitate more towards other games now.
One thing I do want to try, and something that I don't know if you've experienced, I'd like to hear your thoughts, is tournament play, playing in a poker tournament. I've never done that, and I think that I think maybe a little bit of the automatic disdain would maybe go away. Yeah. I think at least because I don't know, maybe not, but I feel like maybe it's a little bit more of an enjoyable experience, and I guess there's little less of a I need to act like I'm better than everybody at the table immediately vibe. I don't know. Have you played tournaments?
I have, yeah. You know, I like tournaments if you want to get a bunch of people involved, like if you're with a group and a lot of people want to play, because it just, you know, it can be a pretty quick experience too, which I think is more advantageous as well. You know, with a group dynamic there. One drawback is, you know, if you're like more of a low roller, you know, these tournaments can go very quickly and you might not feel like you're getting most bang for your buck. And they definitely do, you know, once the levels kind of increase, they become kind of shove fest and everybody's just kind of going all in. And there is, I guess, a lot more luck involved in some of the low stakes poker tournaments than like a standard cash game, which can frustrate some people. It can frustrate me at times. A lot of people really like them. My brother's really great at these low roller tournaments in Vegas because he plays pretty aggressive. So,
okay, very well. When you're in Vegas, you say, I know you said you play up there in Detroit occasionally, but when you're in Vegas, what poker rooms are you going to?
I like Mandalay Bay a lot, I think, but that's early. So I haven't played in a Vegas poker room probably at least 5 years now. It's been a long time, but I like Mandalay Bay a lot because at times there's a lot of conventioneers that might not exactly know what they're doing. Same with like anything kind of in the middle of the strip, say like Flamingo. I love the Aria and Bellagio poker rooms. Unfortunately, there's a lot of good players that play there, yeah. So I tend to stay away. That's the thing, right? So I tend to like a little bit more of the grind joints, if you will, where I might get some, you know, some regulars that are just there to kind of hang out and, you know, I can you know, up my game, be a little bit more aggressive and maybe steal some pots.
Yeah. There's something I'm starting to think about a little bit more. I think there's something about tournament play that appeals to me in that I can see an end goal. And I think that's something that, unless you're under a time constraint or unless you're someone that has a realistic expectation of what to get out of a cash game, like anywhere in the casino, it's difficult to know when you're done. And it's, you know, and I think that's what's nice. That's what's nice about a tournament, or at least what would appeal to me, is that I know that I'm play till I bust, and I know that there is a certain point in which I'm in the money, and you know, and so I think that aspect would help me a little bit, because I think everybody can, no matter what your game of choice is, I think one of the biggest challenges that anybody has in the casino is when to decide, okay, I'm gonna stop playing now.
Yeah. 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 I think that definitely happens for me. I think it's how I apply myself with every game that I play, which is one, if I'm getting tired immediately, I'm just going to get up and leave. But two, if I feel like I've just, you know, I've won a lot, and I know people say, oh, don't leave on a heater and stuff like that. But I mean, given how rare it can be to get good hands in a live poker game, typically if I double my money off a big hand, I'm probably thinking of leaving it the next couple hands. I don't like to leave just after winning the big hand. Right. I don't know why. I mean, I could, there's no reason I couldn't, but I like, you know, a show of good faith that, yeah, I'll stick around, let people have another hand or two to try and get some money back. But that's saying that I would win. If I step into a poker room now, it's been a few years, since I played regularly, I'd probably lose my shirt a couple times.
Yeah. I think the biggest challenge that gamblers have, again, when they're not under a time constraint, because time can force you out of a table no matter what, but when you're down just a little bit, yeah. It is, yeah. You know what I mean? Like if you're close to ruin, or like if you've passed the 50% mark, I guess maybe you can have a little bit of discipline and be like, you know what, I just need to walk away right away now before I lose all of this. But if you're only down maybe 25-30% of what you bought in for and you're not like in a hurry to get out of there, it is super, super difficult to not just want to keep playing to see if you can just get back to even, right?
Yeah, I'd rather be way up or I guess way down, just psychologically speaking, because if you're close to even, that gives you more motivation.
Yeah, that's one thing I actually like about blackjack, I think, more than craps, which are my two games of choice, is at the blackjack table, I can decide to leave when I'm within 25% of my buy-in in either direction. Right. Whereas at the crafts table, it sort of feels like I'm either going to either go ruin or I'm going to come away with like at least a 50% profit, right? Like I want to come away feeling like I really won something.
Yeah, yeah. And in craps, it's so interesting because you can have so much committed at one time, which I think that makes it one of the most exciting games too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you had this podcast, Vegas Fanboy, and talking to, you know, teaching people, at least your insight on budget friendly gambling and travel within Vegas. What would you, you know, I'm sure a number, at least half probably of the audience listening to this at this point are familiar with their show since we share a lot of the audience in the community.
Sure.
But I'm sure there's probably the other half is probably unfamiliar. What are one or two things that, you know, maybe a newbie to Vegas or maybe someone who's been a couple times, haven't figured out the ropes. What are a couple things you tell people every time on enjoying Vegas on a budget, both gambling and not?
I think the big thing is just making sure that you do a little bit of research ahead of time and just knowing where you're going to find the particular games that you want to play. And where you're going to find them at kind of like a decent clip, like where are you going to find the low minimums there? Because I mean, everything is pretty much consolidated in Vegas, but I mean, I'm sure you've been there, right? on previous episode, I think you talked about it, but
yes.
It could be a long walk pretty much anywhere in Vegas where you want to go. And these casinos are not small. And so it can be at times maybe frustrating. So what I would say is, figure out what game do you like. And there are a number of online surveys out there that, you know, you can just Google Blackjack Las Vegas survey and it'll show you, you know, where the, you know, what the table minimums are at each place and when you can find them and those kinds of things. But then I would say, you know, have some fun, maybe dip your toes into a game that you're not so much familiar with, but do that by maybe taking a lesson or something like that or downloading an app before you get out there. But there are a number of resources to find, all the information on where you're going to find the cheap eats, the good games. And I would say that if you are a low roller gambler, that downtown is kind of your place to be. It's going to be hard to find something that you can't afford in the downtown Fremont area.
Yeah, I think for me, when I try to guide people to a good gambling experience, you know, I always try to deter people away from bad house edge games, but you know, some people just really like to play those. Like I have a friend who just really likes to play Mississippi Stud. And you know, like, and I was like, all right, man, like if that's your game, that's your game.
Right.
I don't want you to not enjoy your time at the casino by forcing you on a table that you're not gonna enjoy playing.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I think I always try to encourage people towards good house edge games. And then if that's like, if this was number one on a list of finding the right gambling casino or the right gambling experience, part 1A is good house edge and part 1B would be liability per wager result. And what that is even if you find a craps table that has a really good house edge in the sense that you know it's maybe 10 times odds and you can really shrink down that house edge, if you don't have the bankroll to do that 20 times, then it's better to take the blackjack table that maybe you're losing a quarter of a percent or a half a percent on the house edge, but you're still only risking $10 to $15 per hand versus possibly having upwards of $100-$120 per roll on the craps table. And I think that's just as important. And one thing that kind of goes unmentioned in like this, you know, we all want to have the lowest house edge and the bet, but I mean, if you can only last a half hour at the craps table, did you really have that much fun? You know,
Right. And, you know, and to that point, I kind of, I don't want to say I laugh, but I do at times think it's funny. And I agree with people that, you know, the move from 3-2 to 6-5 blackjack can be annoying because it feels like they're taking something away from us. And they very much are. And we definitely do feel the pain of that. But, you know, there are people that complain about 6-5 blackjack, which is, there is a difference between 3-2 and 6-5, to be sure. But you can't say that and then run to a game that has an even higher house edge than 6-5 blackjack, say like a roulette and stuff like that. Now, I'm not saying people can't complain, but I don't begrudge anybody that plays 6-5 blackjack because they want to play a game that they're more comfortable with and it fits, yeah, like you said, kind of in their price point there. And I would say that if you are going out for the first time, to maybe think about playing a low volatility game so your bankroll can last longer. Say something like Pigou Poker, which doesn't take a ton of skill. It's an interesting game in which you get to handle the cards a bit. A lot of people know the poker hands, and you know, and the dealers typically at Pigou, from what I found, are pretty helpful as well. And so it's kind of a slow burn. You'll get your free drinks, you'll enjoy the casino ambiance, and your bankroll will last a little bit longer.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, you're talking about 3-2 and 6-5. I was playing recently, and I was at a 3-2 table here at MGM National Harbor. And I mean, I went through like 3 or 4 shoes without getting a blackjack, right? And right. And I was kept on giving my dealer a hard time. I was like, look, I'm paying more to be at the 3-2 table so that way I get paid out on a blackjack. Like, if you're not going to give me a blackjack, I'm just going to go to the 6-5 table.
Right.
Where I don't have to bet as much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the interesting thing about gambling is that we all, I think savvy gamblers, and I don't know if I'd consider myself savvy, but I'll just say it for argument's sake. We tend to think about the long-term trends of the game, the long-term mathematics of the game. But at least for me, and I think most casual gamblers, we're actually taking a very short-term proposition when we go into a casino. Like we're not, yeah, I'm not playing the number of hands that is required for a good sample size, you know, that would say that, yeah, I'm going to lose, you know, only 1% house edge at, you know, game X, Y, and Z. Right. So you're right. So at times, you know, it might not even matter as much as we think it does.
Look, I've gone bust at a blackjack table with great rules, and I've tripled up on a continuous shuffle machine on a 6-5 table. You know what
right,
I mean?
Like, right. It doesn't mean that we're not going to continue to advocate for you know, good pay tables and things yeah, like that. But I guess I think my big thing is I will never tell somebody how to approach their, you know, their way around a casino or what games they should play or how they should be betting at any individual game. Because it's all up to you. And, you know, I've certainly had fun at bad house edge games and had a poor time or, you know, losing sessions at good house edge games. And you just kind of, you know, you take them both.
So when you are in Vegas, what else are you looking to do? So what is sort of on your hierarchy of activities in Vegas?
You know, I think for me in Vegas, and I talked about this on my show a lot, was I became more obsessed with just the city in general and kind of the energy of the city than I was about gambling. I think I took my first trip to Vegas when I was in my teens. And, you know, I became obsessed with the city of Las Vegas, not with necessarily the gambling culture. I, of course, naturally took to the gambling culture just because I had been kind of introduced to it before. But I think for me, it's I enjoy watching other people enjoy Vegas. I don't know if that sounds kind of odd there, but to me, just kind of being in the casino, hanging out, watching other people get excited, to me, that's kind of the best thing. So I like finding just, you know, a good cocktail bar in the middle of a casino. Maybe it's got some video poker there. And to me, that's kind of me and my element in Las Vegas. Some people might find that kind of boring, but I just like watching other people have a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, it's, and I'm sure you've gotten the same, sentiment from people, but, I've had friends that are like, you know, I've never been, but if I ever went, I would want it to be with you.
Right.
Like, you know, like I would want you to, and then I'm like, well, I mean, if you want to spend half your day at the craps table,
right. Fine,
but,
yeah. Yeah, I'll say that I do step up my game when I know I'm going to be with other people. So my brother yeah, just turned 21 last year. And so we planned a Vegas trip for him. And I was out and about doing all sorts of activities, taking him around and, you know, doing the standard tour. But no, if it's just left up to me and my vices, yeah, I'd be sipping on some whiskey at a video poker bar in the middle of the casino. And that's it.
Yeah. Where do you stay typically?
I tried to actually sail over. I think that was just kind of the nature of the show, that I tried to make sure I was staying at a bunch of different places so I could review a bunch of different experiences. But, you know, the Strip is getting expensive. I still like it, though. I mean, that to me was how I was first introduced to Vegas. I would say that my favorite maybe unappreciated or underappreciated property is Vidara. And it's a non-gambling hotel, which sounds odd, but it's non-gambling, non-smoking. It's basically attached to Aria Bellagio. It's right in Center Strip. It is set back a little bit, but it's a four-minute walk to the Cosmo. And it's just a beautiful property. It's actually pretty inexpensive for kind of how upscale it is. So I tend to like Vidara a lot.
Okay. Very well. Travel independent of Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
What are reasons that you travel? What are some things that usually draw? Are you visiting people? Are you going places for certain things? Are you looking for certain activities? What kind of traveler are you?
Yeah, so I think I'm probably the least likely person to host a travel podcast that people want to listen to, because I'm very much a person who loves to do nothing. I'm sure there are people that can appreciate that, but I mean, like, I go on vacation, like, my wife and I really gravitate towards places where we can sit and do nothing. So like a good long cruise, Cancun has become a favorite place of ours, right? But I'll get back from a trip and people are like, well, what did you do? I'm like, I didn't do anything. Like, I literally just sat on the beach and watched the waves come in, had a beer in my hand, and it was probably the greatest way I could spend an afternoon. So I'm hoping the show kind of is a catalyst for me to go on maybe kind of more adventure type stuff. But for me in the show, I'm definitely looking to kind of expand my horizons, which is kind of fun. It's an education for myself. And then also, help people kind of maximize the travel loyalty kind of point space as well.
Yeah. So let's talk about that part, because I think that's, I think this is fitting, because I think with the way the timeline shakes out, Eric Rosenthal may be the guest after you, who I know is also a guru in this.
Yeah.
When it comes to we'll stick with independent of Vegas. What loyalty rewards are you actually loyal to, and which ones do you find yourself getting the most bang for your buck out of?
Right. So I think that for me, it kind of varies all the time, and I think that's what a lot of people that are kind of in the space are doing as well. Where I'm never too loyal to one particular company, only because you can use, like, say, like your Chase rewards points or like your Amex rewards points in a way that you can transfer them to a bunch of different companies, properties, things like that. And so while a lot of people will kind of maybe burn and churn a couple like co-branded cards a year, like a hotel credit card or a flight credit card, for a lot of us, it's just really more about knowing how all of these loyalty programs kind of interact and coalesce, and where you can transfer points, you know, back and forth, and really kind of maximize your point value that way. I typically bank with Chase. So for me, it's really about knowing where all of those points can transfer to and at what rate and those kinds of things. And like I said, I think I'm far from a guru. That's why my show is, like I said, more of an education for myself. And I think other people are starting at the same place I am, and we're kind of growing in that process together.
Sure. And then going back to Vegas, you know, as a low roller, as a budget gambler, were you able to find ways to maximize your play and still take advantage of comps?
Absolutely. So I think, well, for me, knowing, and I guess my approach to gambling is that I'm always trying to find the lowest cost possible for the game that I want to play. I'm not one of those guys where as the stakes rise, it gets more exciting for me. And I think other people are like that. I think that's fine. So I knew that my play was not really going to ever garner any attention if I'm a $5 or $10 player. But what I always made sure to do, and this worked for me, there's no results guarantee, is I always just made sure to tip really well and to tip often. Because what I found was, and this is from talking to a couple of pit bosses and dealers as well, is that, you know, when the staff there, especially the ones that are controlling your rating, are seeing you taking care of their staff, they tend to like that. And so, you know, I've been to places where I'm literally had like one session and I bought in for like $150, but I was getting, you know, comped rooms there. You know, that might not be weekend, but I was getting, you know, comped rooms and some minimal free play, but still a free room's a free room. I don't think in terms of what I gave them dollar per dollar wise, it was a good value for them. But I would just say, you know, if you're a low roller and you don't think your play is going to garner any attention, just tip well. And I think generally that's some good karma and good things will happen for you.
Yeah. I'm a big advocate for tipping, and I've noticed that occasionally I don't do this as much as I should, but I always try to, like, after I cash out, ask like what they had me rated at.
Yeah.
And I do know that it's an accurate rating if that person really hasn't seen much of me.
Sure.
And it's an inflated rating if they've seen me interact with their dealers.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so I think there's definitely, I think, something to that. And especially, and this is where I think the one thing I like about Vegas, right, is you have like this, you have this range of low range casinos, mm-hmm. to your luxury casinos. And even, and like you mentioned, even as a low roller, you can put yourself in a situation to where you're sort of being exalted, right?
Yeah.
Like where people are really appreciating your play and stuff. And I remember I was at Harrah's Philadelphia, and it was really a busy of a night, and when I was playing, I noticed I was like, you know, I was 1 in 5 or 1 in 6 people on average that were tipping.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that, like, you know, and this is one thing, and from a gambling point of view, not just a console point of view, from a gambling point of view, that this really helps with is there are times where I'll be chatting and I'll forget to make my bet, and I'll see they're about to roll, and I'll just pronounce my bet and it gets accepted,
yeah,
right away.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's not, they don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. Right. If you were too late on your bet, if the dice are out, the dice are out,
yep.
You know? And so, treating your dealers nice helps in that stance. If I'm looking around for, yeah, I've had one box man clearly can see that I'm looking around for a cocktail waitress and immediately like turns to back to the floor manager, like, hey, if you see a waitress, wave her over here.
Yeah.
And again, I wasn't a high roller. I wasn't balling out at the table. I was playing very conservatively, but I was constantly making like bets for the dealers.
Absolutely.
That's really what we want when we gamble. We want to have fun, yeah. and when we're in a casino, we want to be treated like we want to be treated well.
Yeah, no, and I think you're right. I think, you know, and it's not even, I'm not talking like I'm betting $5 a hand for them. I'm betting a dollar occasionally, maybe, you know, every couple, yeah, of hands, I'm throwing a dollar out there for them. But, you know, if no one else is doing it, you're really going to set yourself apart, like you said. And, you know, they do appreciate it. I had the same thing happen to me where I like to make hard way bets. Speaking of terrible bets I make while I complain about 6 to 5 blackjack. but you know, I get somewhat, I love the ambiance, so I get somewhat aloof when I'm playing at times. And I remember one table multiple times, like, you know, sir, you want that hard 6 again? I'm like, yep. And I'm, you know, tossing them the money. And so, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's, and like I said, it's just kind of, to me, it's good karma, and the dealers are more on your side when that happens.
Yeah. Probably the coolest thing, and I can't remember if I've talked about this on the show before, but the coolest thing that's ever happened to me at a craps table, I think. And I say coolest spinning it because I don't have any of them written them down. So there's probably a number of things. But one of my favorite things that has happened to me at a craps table is I was playing at Maryland Live, and I was playing a continuous don't. And I was like, and when I say continuous don't, I mean like I wasn't missing one roll. I was playing the don't pass and then the don't come, don't come, don't come. And then I was just doing that 7 out, repeat the process. Yeah. Right. And, the bankroll I had and the minimum were good enough where I could just, even on a bad roll, I could maintain that.
Right.
And there was one, and you know, I was there for three plus hours. Right. And so getting into hour three, like you're chatting with everybody. And I forgot to make my don't come bet, and a 3 came out, and I was like, oh, nice. I was disappointed. And the box man was like, go ahead and pay the man $15.
Right. That's awesome.
I didn't have a, yeah, bet. I didn't even have a, yeah, bet on the table. I didn't announce it, but because I was, and because that's just what I was doing. And they, and I, again, I was making, I was being friendly. Like it probably helped that I was like, there was people that were being dicks at the table. Right. That always helps. Like, and I didn't even have a bet announced, and they still paid me because of the routine that I was, mm-hmm, in.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things. Like I said, if you treat them well, they're going to treat you well right back. And I, you know, there are other kind of things, and I'm sure Eric will talk about it as well, about, you know, maybe consolidating your play to one property per day or one reward system per day. And that certainly can help for, you know, your theoretical and stuff like that. I'm a little bit more whimsical when I'm in Vegas or gambling. So I tend to not want to pigeonhole myself to one property per day. And I always just have a habit of using my card anyway. So yeah, in lieu of any kind of fine tuned points that Eric's going to give you, because he is the guru in this, I say, yeah, just tip well, tip often, and good things in the casino tend to, will go your way.
Yeah. Adam, tell me about do you have a favorite gambling, casino, or Vegas themed movie or TV series?
Oh, you know, I'm a big Ocean's fan. So the Ocean's 11, okay. Ocean's 13. I recently watched the original Ocean's 11 again, and I might get some flack for this. I think that movie is absolutely terrible. It's so hard to get through. In the Ocean's 11, the new one, they've got all this high-tech stuff that's going on. In the original Ocean's 11, for them to, like, sneak into, like, the back room, they literally, like, threw change on the ground to distract the guards. And it was so unbelievable that it just gets – and there's, like, just random singing in the middle of it. It just gets, you know, it gets a little bit – it's a little bit tough to watch. Frank Sinatra's big fuzzy orange sweater may be the one thing that saved that movie, in my opinion. But, you know, I got the movie just didn't age as well as I had hoped. But, yeah, I love both Ocean's 11. I love Ocean's 13, too, because I think it's one of those movies where you can tell all the actors were having a fun time making the movie. Like, they all seem pretty cordial and friendly with each other. So, yeah, I enjoy those two quite a bit.
Okay. Tell me, with whatever you're comfortable with, tell me about a loss that you took.
Okay.
And if you're not comfortable with that, I'll accept a big win as well. But I think, and the reason why I would prefer a loss, but I'll take the story of the big win as well. But I think there's one thing that, you know, like all gamblers can, like, we kind of remember when we had big wins, you know, but yeah, those losses, like, we really remember those.
Well, how about this? I will tell you about a $15 win that was theoretically a $2,500 loss, and it just happened to me, actually.
Okay.
So I like Paigo Poker a lot. I was at Caesars Windsor, which is just across the river here in Detroit, and this literally just happened a couple weeks ago. And I'm not a bonus bet guy. I typically, when I'm playing a table game, I don't bet the bonus bets just because of the high house edge. And really it's more just because I see those bets really just hemorrhaging cash. I see it just bleeding people dry at the table bet after bet. And so my rule for bonus bets is I have to be able to only bet a dollar on it. And the maximum amount I can win on that bonus bet, it has to put me into a new tax bracket for the year. That's kind of how I like I say whether. So, you know, with Paigo Poker, there's some progressive jackpots out there that, you know, you bet a dollar and you're going to win 200 grand, 300 grand based on how high the progressive is. The table I was at, the bonus was the top earning bonus was 2,500 to one. And you had to get a 7-card straight flush, which is an incredibly rare hand to get. Sure enough, I get dealt a 7-card straight flush, ace of diamonds to 7 of diamonds. And literally when I opened it up in my hand, it was in order already. I've never seen anything like it. The dealer had never seen that hand before. The pit bosses that were there had never seen the hand before. They were literally like calling people over to look at it. They wouldn't let me take a picture of it, of course. But of course I didn't have the bonus bet down there. For some people, it's like a huge no-no, right? A lot of people always play the bonus bets. What's nice is that two people at the table had a $5 bet on the bonus, and they got what's called the envy bonus. So two people at the table won $1,000 just because I hit that hand. They each gave me $100. So I guess I actually won like $215 because I actually won the hand as well. But, you know, some people were giving me flack for it. Like, you know, why are you even gambling if you're not going to, you know, gamble? But again, to me, it's just, you know, I just don't get in the habit of doing that. And, you know, $2,500 wasn't going to be a life-changing money for me. So I don't, I'm not too bent out of shape out of it, but, it was really fun just having that hand and seeing the reaction and stuff like that. But, yeah, I guess that's a theoretical loss, if you will.
The blackjack table that I, play at has an in-between bets. Mm-hmm. And then it also has a progressive jackpot bet. And no one plays the progressive jackpot. Everybody plays this in-between bet. But it's one of those things, like, I feel like half the people at the table play it whenever I'm playing. And, like, everybody looks at you like, oh, like, every time it could have won. Or they like, look at you like, what are you doing not winning? And I'm like, no one ever points out like, oh, look, you wouldn't have won that time. Right? Yeah. Like, no one points out the 10 times for every one. that you would have lost. Right. And that's what I always find. And that goes back to like my, like what I find fascinating about gambler psychology is, you know, they is that like, oh, why wouldn't you get, like, if you're here to gamble, why aren't you gambling? I am gambling. I'm gambling a certain, like, you, yeah, like I'm, this bet is a wager. Like,
exactly.
I don't know if I'm going to win. That's the gamble. Yeah. And you know, the, what I like about people that play the bonus though, at least the blackjack table, is it wins on a full table. There's usually one person who wins, per hand at the, and so it slows the game down.
Right, yeah.
And so, you know, to maximize comps and stuff like that, like it's, I like that it's a night, it really stretches the game, especially if you have a dealer that's sort of moderate on the speed already.
Right.
Yeah. All right, Christian. I don't know. Or, I'm sorry, Christian. Wow. sorry. I have the list of questions open from an email that I sent to a person named Christian. So I apologize for that. Adam, I like to play a game called Bet Your Life on it. I'm going to give you a scenario. You're going to choose a side. You're going to bet your life on it. I exaggerate in this way because I want to make it seem like this high stakes decision.
Yeah,
but obviously we know this is purely hypothetical. Adam, I will not come hunting you for your life if you get this wager wrong. Should you win, hypothetically, you would be granted an entire second lifetime. But if you were to get this wager wrong, you would die the second the event ended.
Okay.
So here it is. Mike Tyson versus Muhammad Ali, each in their prime.
This might be just some recency bias, but I'm going to go with Mike Tyson on this one.
Okay. All right.
There's a living daylight. Like and this is odd because months ago I just pulled up some old Mike Tyson clips, and I think that he just needs one good shot and it's done. And he is one of, I'm not going to talk about him as a person, but he's one of the most fascinating people I've ever seen in any sport. So I'm going to go with Tyson. No disrespect to Ali. Obviously one of the greatest, but yeah, I'm going to go with Tyson if he lands one.
Okay. I like that. I appreciate that, especially because, you know, the original or the first question was Browns versus, a third party, candidate. You know, people are familiar with that question. And what I'm trying to do is I want to, and once one side gets up to five choices, and I want to switch to question, and you're the fourth person I'm interviewing today with this question, and you're the first person to pick Mike Tyson.
I figured that would be the case. Yeah.
Which I appreciate though, because I like the idea that that these aren't I'm hoping that I wouldn't just pick a bunch of like questions that automatically go 5-0.
Right. Well, I think it kind of mirrors what I like about the casino. Like when I'm gambling, I'm pretty like straight laced and by the book, but I love, like, if I'm at a blackjack table, I know people get annoyed by it. I love people that make goofy plays at a blackjack table, like guys that are trying to split tens, or, you know, they're hitting, you know, against a dealer 16 like that. I just enjoy seeing people, you know, do fun things in the casino. So I think this kind of speaks to that a little bit.
Okay. I can appreciate that. I can appreciate that. Adam, it's been a pleasure talking to you, sir.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, for just knowing you sort of by name and by reputation, I think we hit it off here well.
Absolutely.
For people that are not familiar with what you do, where can they find your show? Why would they want to listen, and how can they find you online?
So you can find me at travelfanboy.com or on Twitter at travelfanboy. And like I said, if you're interested in maybe figuring out how you can maximize points, loyalty, travel rewards, like credit card bonuses, and then hear about just different experiences when traveling. I think every episode I trade off, I do like a loyalty point show, then I do just like a different type of travel experience show. In fact, my most recent show is all about different mob bars across the U.S., which has been kind of fun. So yeah, I would love for anyone to, like I said, interact and you know, give me some feedback there.
I like it. Adam, thank you so much for your time.
Of course. Thank you.
All right. That's going to wrap up episode 9. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. I'm not going to drag this on too much more. Just going to mention that by the end of today, I should say by the beginning of Gamblapalooza The Better Life will have an Instagram page, also at The Better Life. So check that out if you want to see some images from, if you want to see images from Gamblepalooza. Patreon.com/TheBetterLife. If you want to see a more frequent update from what's going on at Gamblepalooza, be a follower on Patreon. I'm going to be doing a little bit of tweeting. I'll be able to do a little bit of Instagramming, but I'm going to do a little bit more running commentary as I can on Patreon for my followers there. I think actually half of the people that follow me on Patreon now will be at Gamblepalooza. The other half of you will have to follow us on Patreon. Patreon.com/TheBetterLife. You know, kick us a pledge a dollar and get in on the Gamblepalooza fun. Be sure to rate us and review in iTunes. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you next week with a Gamblepalooza trip report. Good night. Good luck.